I'm the Eggman. They are the Eggman. I am the Walrus. Coo-coo-coo-choo. Well, here we go. Tusk, apologies for the sound quality of today's episode. Was recorded extemporaneously, very quickly, very late at night on my Android phone, so perhaps not the best, but I'm going to get back to my regular mic setup next week, and for the foreseeable future, enjoy the show.
Top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies podcast, a celebration of genre cinema.
Here's an impromptu phone recorded version of the Really Awful Movies podcast, Tusk. Now, I'm by no means, by way of introduction, a Kevin Smith fanboy. I appreciated Clerks. I think some of his Jersey suburban sensibilities are kind of lost on me, and I would say I'm more dogma than dogma, if that makes sense. So I like the movement that came, the Nordic film movement of dogma filmmaking, but not so much dogma, although I appreciate, I think, the singular stamp that Smith has put on his little corner of the cinema business. I think it's really amazing. He was in many respects ahead of his time and was able to navigate the worlds of bigger budget, but also more lean, threadbare cinema and do it quite effortlessly. So kudos to him. Kind of a cool guy, almost an honorary Canadian hockey guy, a very engaging fellow and, you know, endlessly entertaining. When you hear him talk about the craft of filmmaking, I think you can slot Tarantino into that. Although I think when it comes to him as a filmmaker, he's kind of in the same vein as like a Rob Zombie, where he has his own particular stamp and his own niche that's undeniable in his own outlook. But I think his output falls a little bit short. And I think both have about 2.5 good movies that I think they've really made. Maybe 3 in the case of Smith, and maybe 2.5 in the case of Zombie. And to the extent you can thrust Tusk into that one is based in large part on one's sensibility. Now, this is another weird one because it's got as its star Justin Long, obviously from those quite awful Mac commercials, but also, the rom-com hero of yesteryear, but who's fashioned quite a name for himself in 3 films that I've seen very recently that have been quite good in their own way. And he's almost been transformed into a kind of scream king. If you look at something like A Barbarian, which I think was filmed in part in Detroit, but in large part, I think, in Hungary for tax purposes. But he plays a Me Too'd star who has to offload a bunch of assets when he has to fight a court case and finds himself in a subterranean hell. But I think his best work, and I think what plays most to his strengths, is kind of an obnoxious, punchable asshole, is in Jeepers Creepers, an incredibly underrated flick that really expertly combines the supernatural and the monster movie creature feature, as well as the, if you want to call it like a roadside chase kind of film. And I think does expertly handling multiple genres and doing it really splendidly. And he was really dynamite in that one. And with Tusk, we find ourselves in that territory that was explored in the first Blumhouse Halloween movie, which is something that I'm engaged with, as no doubt everyone is well aware, the endeavor of podcasting, which I've been doing since about 2015. And it's kind of weird when you go back and see how much the space has matured. And the fact that it even has matured is kind of mind-boggling, to say the least, given that I thought I was a late adopter, or not exactly the earliest adopter, when I started the show with Jeff, the Really Awful Movies podcast, back in 2015, because if I'd had my druthers I'm not exactly sure what a druther is, as an aside, but if I had my way, I think it would have been better to come to the table with a podcast, I think a year or so earlier, to really gain any sort of traction. Anyway, I think in the case of Tusk, and maybe because it was more of a zeitgeist thing, I think it was a much better way to introduce a story than it turned out to be in 2018's Halloween, where it just sort of looked like artifice and affectation, and just like its sole purpose was to employ a fan service to Jamie Lee Curtis and to get people interested in her as a character instead of organically bringing her to the forefront. And I thought that was really, really, I guess, shambolically handled in the case of 2018's Halloween. But I think here works kind of in an interesting way. You've got a duo, unfortunately named the Not See Party, as in Notsee. And obviously homonym, I forget what it is at this point. It's kind of a late night, but these guys are edge lords back in the day, and they are, weirdly, because they're a podcast, they're almost aping some of the morning zoo type personalities that were around, I think, 5 years to a decade prior, the likes of an Opie and Anthony and, of course, Howard Stern and whatnot. So you have these two guys who are really raunchy and obnoxious, and one of whom is Wallace, who's played by Justin Long. The other, his name escapes me, and is played by Haley Joel Osment, of all people, who hasn't done much since, and since obviously breaking on the scene in The Sixth Sense. So it was really curious to see him, and I think he's kind of effective in this role here as the sort of plus one and the straight man to the Wallace character, and doing one of these shows that really is part and parcel of that online mocking and commentary on all things internet, and in the case of this one here, going after a guy who made some sort of blunder with a lightsaber, and the whole premise behind this is that they're going to go interview this kid and make it fodder and make him the butt of an extended series of jokes. Next thing you know, Wallace is on a plane to Manitoba to meet this kid. If anyone knows anything about Kevin Smith, you'll see him interviewed with Edmonton Oilers jerseys. He, I don't know if he lives in Canada a part of the year, but he has an inordinate fondness for all things a Great White North, and that might have bled into what we see here. But what you have is Wallace trying to get in touch with this guy who made a viral video, and it turns out that in quite comic fashion, actually, in a way, there's a very, very poorly attended funeral, and it turns out the guy has offed himself. One can only assume, based on the negative and bullying feedback he received about his video. So what we're left with is Wallace, stuck in Winnipeg, Manitoba, the center of Canada, geographically speaking, and he has to find some sort of content as a suitable substitute for this lolcow, and finds himself in a bar, and in the bathroom stall there's a mysterious and enigmatic note, and he figures he's going to reply because it is all in meant to entice, and has someone who has got a story to tell, and being that he doesn't want to waste the trip, he figures he's going to pursue the matter. And what you have is this figure going into the woods and happening upon this giant sprawling mansion, and being sort of isolated there in a way that kind of the Canadian horror classic Curtains does, in a little kind of way, if you want to treat it as a almost sort of a quasi audition, where there's a content seeker and going up to meet their interview subject. And it's kind of got an interesting setup in that way, as to isolate these two figures. Now, people have likened Tusk to the likes of a human centipede in that respect, as if insofar as it's kind of one of these evil mad scientist Dr. Moreau type, you know, masterminds and Svengali's who's looking to create this kind of awful experiment. But I think it has just as much in common with the likes of, I think his name is Mark Duplass's Creep. But there's other movies of its type where you have a couple people who are isolated and the horror comes from the experience of one-to-one interactions, like maybe Kathy Bates in A Misery or something, or you could go on like that. But it's definitely more than the kind of casual and cavalier and kind of dismissive correlate or to something like A Human Centipede. I think there's a little bit more to it. I think it still travels that kind of path, though, of the characters isolated and one, as it turns out, being quasi deserving of his fate, and that's the Long character, who, much like in Barbarian, has a kind of a backstory that's very, very shady, and we find out that he's a cheating scumbag despite having this lovely girlfriend. I forget the actress's name. She's outstanding here as the kind of put upon love interest who is actually having an affair with Wallace's co-host, and she's just absolutely dynamite and brings a lot of groundedness and gravitas to the role. And so what you have is the kind of a comeuppance scenario where we find out that Justin Long's Wallace has been lured up to the actually north of Winnipeg, so in the sticks of Manitoba. And he's been lured there to serve a very evil purpose, and that's it's almost in a way it reminds me of this kind of lurid, grotesque show called Criminal Minds. I'm not sure if it's still on, but every week that one seemed to want to, or the writers and the producers wanted to outdo one another with various antagonists doing different things to the bodies and various scenarios. There'd be someone who would, I don't know, blow them up with various gases, or stitch them up with various, I don't even know, like, sewing machines, God knows what, you name it. But in the case of Tusk, I think it more harkens back to this kind of the gross out of maybe some of the more, some of the victims you'd see in maybe David Fincher's Seven. I think it has more in keeping with that kind of cinematic approach rather than just the sheer, you know, torture dynamic that you see in something like A Human Centipede. So kudos, granted. But also I think it's a lot more talky and a lot more intelligent and a lot more engaging and a lot more chatty than the likes of A Human Centipede as well. And in fact, there's a case to be made that whether when you have this interlocution between the Wallace character and Howard Howe, as it turns out, a nom de plume of this Canadian who's been on the lam and who's been apparently, as we find out later, murdering people across the country. But yeah, this dialogue between them references everything from I think the Rime of the Ancient Mariner, Samuel Taylor Coleridge, but also like other notable works of art and cultural references and touchstones, and a really good, really solid dynamic between Wallace and the kind of older statesman, elder statesman, of Howard Howe, who drops these tales of having met, for whom the bell tolls, author Ernest Hemingway. And you have these flashbacks that are done in black and white that show in one instance, I guess, Howard apparently having an encounter in the North Sea with walruses, and then this winking Ernest Hemingway, who he encounters when he's part of a kitchen staff of some sort of, I think it was, it might have been a battleship, I forget the context. Anyway, you have these not entirely effective or arresting flashbacks that could have possibly been dispensed with, and you have this dynamic where this elder tales teller is weaving quite a yarn and really luring in the Justin Long character, to the point where His MO is gradually revealed, and I think with great effect, a tremendous effect, I should say. You almost sound like tremendous, tremendous. You almost sound like a Donald Trump when you use that adjective, but really you start to hear his grand plan and his vision for reconstituting a walrus out of Wallace, and a neat little subtle turn on the character's name. And you find out there's this very Hemingway-esque, I guess, tale of this walrus penis that the Justin Long character lifts off the shelf, and they have this discussion about it. And we find out that there's something afoot and something that this guy has planned for the unknowing podcast host that's going to put him in mortal peril. And this is where things really get going and turn into a higher gear. Now, against the backdrop of this is, I guess, a marital discord and acrimony at home in Los Angeles between the Wallace character and his wife. And this is told in part in flashbacks, too. And she obviously had a relationship with him before he broke it big as this kind of very, very well-loved podcaster a la the Paul brothers. It's hard to really describe because what kind of category he might occupy, because he's got a bit of an edgelord sensibilities, like maybe a Legion of Skanks, but doesn't come from the comedy world. It's kind of nebulous. He's this sort of just a shit talker and sports this, well, dare I call it like a walrus style mustache. It makes him cut like a little bit of an Anthony Kiedis figure from the Red Hot Chili Peppers. So you have this dynamic going on of him at home in Los Angeles and this infidelity with his friend and podcast host, and the discord with his wife. And then you have him go to Canada, and you have these characters from Kevin Smith's other movies that play, well, not characters not unlike the twosome in Clerks. And they're basically a C channels, I would call it in my field, convenience channel, a convenience store workers, some at the likes of the local 7-Eleven or Circle K or one of these places. And they have this interaction with Wallace, and they say, oh, you're like 2 hours away from this guy's place. It's super far, dude. And they make some remark about him being an asshole American, and because he makes fun of the way they say about or about. It's really kind of hackneyed in a way. And I think if we're going to segue into what we learned here, it was kind of curious to watch this as a Canadian and seeing Quebecois, French Canadian accent in the form of, I think it was an uncredited Johnny Depp, if I'm not mistaken, playing this Raymond Lapointe or some Sûreté du Québec police investigator who's hunting this serial killer. And there's sort of little bits of Canadiana that don't ring true that kind of mar the proceedings, I think. In one case, there's a character who laughingly says Canada doesn't produce serial killers when I guess one of the characters responds with incredulity that the long arm of the law is actually pursuing a serial killer and doesn't find it to be a feasible thing, which I think is ridiculous considering this is the country that produced the pig farmer, Robert Picton, but also Clifford Olson, a notorious child murderer, also in British Columbia, who killed a dozen kids, I think, under the age of 14. Not to mention there's a spree killer who shot a bunch of students in Montreal, of female engineering students, and of course, the Ken and Barbie killers. So we certainly have our fair share. And in my hometown of Toronto, there's a gay serial killer. I don't even think he has a nickname, probably for the best. But anyway, it's just one of these hollow things that was supposed to be a nod to Canadiana and probably playing with these kinds of stereotypes of saying a boot, which is ridiculous, and in niceties about how friendly Canadians are and this strange dynamic and sort of a condescension of the Wallace character. It doesn't always hold true, and kind of a stereotypical Quebecois accent and hockey references that are ridiculous. And tonally, I think what leaves Tusk hanging a little bit is the wild veering between comedic moments that are quite good, but I think also at times misplaced from and the juxtaposition of body horror and something like you almost see in like a Midsommar with the bear scene, if you haven't seen that. But there's the animalistic aspects of this, the grand design of this guy's plan, this perp, and what he has in store as it pertains to walruses, as you could probably gather or guess from the title. But yeah, just these sort of sensibilities don't always work well together, though there are comedic moments that do strike a beat that are quite solid. But there is a certain campiness that is at loggerheads with, I think, some of the, I think, quite amazing cinematography and darkness and foreboding that at times is brought to bear in the proceedings by Smith. And the star, the antagonist, is Parks. He's particularly great. He was also in Red State, which I admit I haven't seen. I've not seen a lot of the of Kevin Smith. I'm not, again, partial to a lot of his movies, but I think there is certainly a kernel of a gem of an interesting, really cool movie in Tusk. I just think that its downfall lies in the kind of the condescension that's meant to be taking cheeky pot shots at Canadians. I don't think serves this film particularly well. I think the performances are really, really good across the board. And I think the dialogue is splendid. And you could have, I don't know if they could have, if Smith could have given himself a little more runway to even lure the unsuspecting podcaster in a little more through this grand discussion and this freewheeling, quite lengthy talk that they have about all sorts of different things over tea, of all things, that they bond over tea before. Of course, you're probably best not to receive any refreshments given to you in a strange mansion. But I think the talky aspects of it, and how the perp and victim come to acquaint themselves, is really quite expert. And there's even a little nod to a couple of, if you want to say, like, famous Canadian TV programs known for people faking wheelchair access, and that you could throw that all the way back to SCTV, but also something like the Trailer Park Boys. So that was kind of neat as well, that the perp didn't really need a use of a wheelchair, but is basically just a grift and a design to probably, much like in the way Ted Bundy used, you know, his the Beetle car to make himself seem approachable and friendly, because after all, no one driving a silly, fatuous car like that could be up to no good. But quite a movie this is, that's for sure. I think if to the extent that with which it resembles, I think, some of the frights you see in The Seven, I think some of the horrors that have resonated with other people, I think, could be a little bit muted. I think I saw some of it coming. I was a little disappointed that I was able to suss out the infidelity subplot just by the presence of a hand stroking a face, which telegraphed things enough to know where things were going on that front. But that's not to say that this isn't kind of a flawed mini masterpiece, because just the chutzpah and the balls to make a movie about someone who wants to fashion a sort of a hybrid man-beast in some kind of faraway sprawling mansion is quite, I mean, quite innovative and inventive, to say the least. And I'm going to probably give this one a 3 out of 5, and this is where my rating scale really serves me well. I think you can give kudos to Smith here for perhaps biting off a little bit more than he could chew, but for doing so in a way that I think fails spectacularly without being a spectacular failure. Solid all around, and super fun, at least, and, you know, again, very, very unique in its own weird, quirky little way. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed this brief discussion here. We'll talk to you soon, and take care. Thank you.